Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. And this is my new home. I moved last weekend, which is why I have to stand here and apologize for my absence to all of you, because I've promised many, many times to be always available every single week, and last week I was not available. And that is because I did not have internet to upload, or really a lot of infrastructure. It's been a while since I've moved, and this is the first time that I've moved with my son in carry-on. Well, not just that, but not having any roommates. I don't have any sort of other person there to help me assemble anything. You know, usually I've done this as a partnership since I've had my son. I have lived alone before. I'm not saying I haven't lived alone before, but this time was completely different, you know, and it was kind of a trip, and it was very overwhelming. I was very tired last week. To go back to my conservation of energy episode, which I hope that if you're a new listener, please go back into the back draw. I have a lot of interesting material from different topics. I decided to sprint the race last week. I could have paced myself, and everybody around me, which to me, all the voices from everybody around me are the voices of God. And all the voices, all my friends, all my coworkers, everybody, my son's therapist even, I felt like were telling me to pace myself and to take it slow. And I couldn't for some reason. And I insisted on sprinting the race. And it got done, and I'm alive. But I barely slept last Tuesday night at all. I probably got 2 or 3 hours of sleep, and I was working full time the entire time last week while I was moving and assembling and doing all of this, which is crazy because, you know, I would get up at 5, go to work, and then, you know, I'd be doing stuff until 9:30 or 10, you know. And tonight is the first night that I've had internet in the house, and I just got the modem set up, and I got all the devices connected so that I'm able to record this. And, you know, it's just a mind fuck because last Monday or Tuesday, I came into the apartment and the carpet that I'm standing on with my bare feet right now, it was completely soaking wet. And I got very aggravated and I ended up lashing out and losing my temper on my loved ones that were helping me. Not because I was mad at them or that I had any specific opinion towards them or their efforts, but I was mad at the situation and I felt like I was expecting it like always. And expectations are the ruin of us all. And in this moment, my expectations were not becoming. And, you know, I'm bitterly disappointed in some of my actions and my behaviors. Yet, I still had that assistance, and I was not able to put anything into the bedrooms the first night. I put some stuff in, and then I kind of, like, rotated around in the morning, so anything that I placed on the ground had a place to get dry again. Yet, we had to sleep in the living room. You know, I had to place a bed out in the living room, and there was just so many fucking boxes, you know, and I unpacked for 3 or 4 days, I would say, and, you know, Saturday afternoon came this weekend, which was a day late. I know this was a day after I should have been putting this episode out. And, you know, I still had quite a bit of stuff to do. I had to put my bookshelves together Saturday, which took about 2 or 3 hours. And I put my bookshelves in my closet. I wish you could see it. It's amazing. My closet is like this smoking den / bookatorium, and I just got a lovely recliner that's in my room that I plan on like sitting back in and reading here as soon as I get a lamp and a little table, you know. And man, what was I even fucking saying? I apologize. Yet getting everything in and getting the books set up and having everything done, all the boxes set out, having all the extra bullshit put into my little storage closet thingy that I have on my patio. You know, that was all done around Saturday, 11 o'clock. But then I had to go to my D&D game, which was wonderful because it was the first time in like 6 days that I stopped moving and just enjoyed the comfort and the camaraderie and friendship of my friends while we played our game. It was just, it was wonderful. It was the first time I was able to relax in a really long time because I'd just been sprinting and sprinting. Yet Sunday comes and there was nothing to do. And, you know, I guess you could say I christened this house for the first time with my sacrament, the psilocybic variety, you know, my magical medicine that I imbibe. And I had a wonderful Sunday morning and I read books for the first time in a whole week. And it was just really nice. And then, you know, today, Monday, work, new coworker, and today was a really good day, and I got the internet box, and, you know, there's a couple more things that I gotta do to tie up loose ends, such as government assistance, and I have to make sure that I'm on top of my utilities, and blah, 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 and I gotta figure out the summer still. Like, there's still things, but, you know, we're in this home, and my son is in this home, and he's happy, I think, and I'm gonna make this a good, loving place that he can grow in, you know, and there's no hurry anymore, because as far as I'm concerned, this is the only ideal, is to have a home, a good home, and now I can focus on making it good and pouring love into it. So I'm very happy to share that with you. And I know I may have been speaking for quite a while about personal business here, and I'm not sure how long this episode will be. This might be rather short. But I'm so grateful for my circumstances. I waited a long time for this place, and a lot of the times I didn't believe in it, but a small part of me leaned into, you know, voices that were pushing me into this. And even though I didn't believe it a lot of the time, even though I could have self-jeopardized this, and I almost did on several circumstances with my attitude, you know, I was still given this opportunity by the world to be able to try to make this work. And I'm so grateful that I have this opportunity, you know. And I'm grateful to be here speaking with you. I missed you. It's been way too long. In hindsight, I would have done all of this completely different. You know, I guess to go into conservation of energy again, we believe that we can earn more time in the future by running now. And I think that that is a gross miscalculation of worth and value. For one thing, is how worthy is your time? What is worthy of your attention to what you're doing in that moment of time? Because time is only the little parcel that you can pick apart from the mosaic of life. Or, you know, life is a big old chunk of bread, a loaf of bread sitting in a pan, and at any moment is just a slice of life, if you want to think of it in that metaphor. But one thing I realized is that I was just tired. You know, and I guess right now I'm here early. Maybe I would have been recording this a couple days later, you know, but I guess I'm not tired anymore either. So, well, thank you, me, for burning so much. But I was really miserable, me, you know, and there's no reason for that. You know, I could have done this completely with a much kinder attention to my own energy output. You know, so some questions for you to think about and consider in this moment. How are you spending your time? What are you worried about? You know, do you have a concern? Do you have a monster standing behind the bushes or lurking under the bed? You know, do you have anything standing away from this moment in time that you are concerned about? Because nothing that is monstrous is ever really in this certain moment. It's never as bad as the monster that lurks in the shadows of the subconscious and expectations when we're thinking about what will be. You know, this meditative anxiety, this considered conundrum, the monster that is never there. You know, I'm not saying that shitty things aren't happening right now, and that's ludicrous. There is most likely going to be shit coming up soon, or bigger shit in the near future. You know, there's always going to be shit coming, you know, but my point is that I don't think that we are knowledgeable enough to actually guess what that shit exactly is going to be. So we never are exposed to the monsters of our subconscious and the monsters of our expectations. You know, so whatever that thing is that you're worried about, you know, are you rushing away or from it or towards it? You know, I was worried about getting this home set up because I was worried about being tired. And in that worry of being tired, I forced it upon myself in some weird, like, martyristic expression of it. You know, we don't have to rush away from it or towards it. You know, whatever it is. You know, I lost my mind for a little bit, if I'm honest. While I was spent hurrying, caught in this tornado of doing, I was nothing but action for so many hours. Just do, put away, clean. And I'm still struggling with it, that even though I'm trying to relax now and I am technically, quote unquote, relaxed, I still am being dragged away into this tidal pool of action. You know, I'm being pulled into doing. And it's because I've just been doing for so fucking long. And it was just, this is just a really short experiment. You know, in memory, I've been in that tidal pool of doing for years at a time. You know, a lot of our kids, when they have to go do school and then afterwards they go do activities and they go home and do homework and they never have any time to just sit and be, they're caught in the tidal pool of doing, you know, worse than any anxious adult could ever think it is. They're just far stronger than we are. It's too much to be doing too much. I want to go back to doing a little less. I meditated for the first time on Sunday. Haven't done it since, and I hope to do it after this short conversation with you, my friend. But action, burnout. I hope that you are making space for yourself like I intend to do for me. It's good to take care of yourself. It's good to eat fresh vegetables and fresh fruits and to appreciate the food that you put on a plate for another. It's good to seek a way to help a friend or an enemy. It's good to be good to you and to everyone around you, whatever you decide good means. Because words are just fickle little bottles cast into the ocean with expectations of meaning to arrive. Yet, we can't cast meaning into anybody's head. We can't cast meaning into our own heads. We can delve and build it, but we can't make it makes sense. Sense comes It doesn't come from doing, though. You don't act it into existence. Remember what it is you are fighting for. Love yourself. Love your family. Love your friends. Love a stranger. Love the species. Love all the things that are living that aren't our species. And then love this rock that we're skipping around on. Whether you think it's flat, hollow, concave, convex, or globe, or a pear. You know? But it starts with loving you. That's the seed. And then love grows out through the through all the peripherals, through all the nervous system, throughout your aura. Whatever you want to call it, it emanates. And it's infectious. And it starts with what you're doing. So I was reading Carl Jung's Red Book this weekend. And there's this scene where Carl is sitting. And the entire book is in metaphor. It's entirely an allegorical tale where he delves through hell and he has conversations with all these spirit beings. Yet it's all an internal diatribe. And he's conversing with himself and he's going through these personal statements, which is why it's all metaphorical, because it's impossible to ever subjectify your own subjectivity to another. You can't put your own feeling into another person. You can only try to talk about it. Yet these words, they're weak vehicles. And Carl sits above this tower and he's in this field. And I envisioned it kind of like the scene from The Dark Tower. Not to digress further, The Dark Tower is a Stephen King book where it starts out with a gunslinger named Roland Deschange, I think. And he goes through like six and a half thousand. 6,500 pages. I'm sorry, I don't know why I tripped over those numbers. Yet, at the end of it, he comes to the center of the worlds and there's like this gigantic black tower that's sitting in this field, and at the bottom is just this field of blood red roses in abundance going out just forever. And so I envision like this really high tower. And for some reason, Jung is in isolation, and it almost seems to be this self-isolation, because he's looking for something that he desires, which is why he's at the top of the tower, so that he can look around. Yet the field is empty, and he can't see anything that he wants. And that's what makes him afraid, is that he has gotten to a point where he doesn't desire anything anymore, which is a similar theme that I related to. And eventually, Jung spots like a dust cloud. I saw it in my head. And this crimson red rider comes riding down this path amid the roses for me. And yeah, so yet again, I was adding my own little bits into this vision. And the rider gets to the tower. And the only thing Jung can say is that this has to be the devil. This has to be the devil. You know, he's got red clothes, red hair. You know, he seems to be glowing and emanating this reddom. And this red changes, and it goes from different types of red. And the man seems sarcastic. And Jung and the red rider begin having conversations about religion. And I think this is primarily because Jung assumed he was the devil. And that's why the sarcastic figure assumed the polemicist in this discussion upon theistic value. Once they get to the bottom of their bickering, the writer finally decides to admit that he is joy, which I found quite compelling. Why would joy be so fearsome, so sarcastic? Yet, have quite a bit of insight in the polemical value of the questions that were asked. Polemicism is, for example, a good polemicist will give you the opposite of whatever you give them back. And a sort of sophist-like form where, so, say, like, for instance, Flat Earth, great example. A good polemicist would go and approach a flat earther and give them the globe argument, and would approach a globe argument and give them the flat earth argument. So you give them the opposite of their values. And for me, I've always felt that it was a benefit to do that. And here's why. If I give you the opposite and I don't have any attachment to either argument, you're either going to reinforce your own argument and convince me more, or my questions are going to erode your belief. But if they are eroded thus, that is because they're a weak belief. So it's a benefit either way, where I either build it and I convince myself and I have firmer beliefs through our discussion, or I help you because it becomes easier to see. And if you no longer believe your own argument, how can you be mad at me? And that comes from being non-attached to it. You know, I don't care. Neither of these ideas has anything to do with who I am or who I identify as in any discussion with anybody, any belief, any idea, you know. So I'm going into this with goodwill because I want to help. And yet that will inevitably cause anger if you ever choose to play that role, which I think is a valuable role to be played. So this is sort of the atmosphere that I saw in this Red Rider. And why would that be joy? Why would that be joy? You see, joy is fearsome, and in a way, joy is the devil, because joy can destroy you, and people lose themselves to passion, and passion leads to ignorance, and once one just needlessly seeks passion-filled activity, that is the definition of ignorance. So, joy can be a fearsome figure, and that's why it is scary. And that's why I've always been afraid whenever I've had a good up feeling. At the top of a high mountain, you must roll down in whatever sort of wheeled thing you're on, even if you're tobogganing in the snow. It doesn't make sense, though, to rush down the hill or to needlessly endanger yourself and stick your hands outside of the vehicle if you're going fast enough, though. And life has a way of pushing us where we need to be, when we need to be. I want to remind you of the story of the man who built the wicker boat made of, like, it was basalt wood. You know, the really thin, flimsy shit. And he pushed himself out into the ocean, and all the wood did was expand and get firmer and made his raft better. And the current took him from island to island. He was astonished at how easy it was to gather food when the flying fish flew out of the ocean and just landed right on his raft. And yet again, the current took him from place to place. I'm not saying it chose to. I think humans make decisions. We fabricate things, and humans build futures. The world just happens. Sometimes if we stop building, we just find that the flow takes us to the island that we needed to be on. Let's do a little bit of quotations before we go on to my son. First, Chuang Tzu. With this would be Thomas Merton's. He didn't quite translate it. He accumulated these as his favorites. And Thomas Merton was a Christian mystic from the 1800s at some point. I'm going to be very vague because I have no fucking clue off the top of my head. He was an interesting fellow, had a lot of interesting ideas. Please further look into him if you have any sort of curiosity. Curiosity is the is amazing. You know, pursue that shit. So this is the useless tree. Huitzu said to Chung, "I have a big tree. They call it a stink tree. The trunk is so distorted, so full of knots. No one can get a straight plank out of it. The branches are so crooked, you cannot cut them up in any way that makes sense. There it stands beside the road. No carpenter will even look at it. Such is your teaching, big and useless," Chung Su replied. Have you ever watched the wildcat crouching, watching his prey? This way it leaps in that way, high and low, and at last it lands in that trap. But have you seen the yak? Great as a thundercloud, he stands his might. Big? Sure, he can catch mice. So for your big tree? No use. Then plant it in the wasteland. An emptiness. Walk idly around, rest under its shadow. No axe or bill prepares its end. No one will ever cut it down. Useless, you should worry. So I think I might have read this before on the show, but I don't care. You might hear things more than once on this show. I read things the way that they come to me. Tonight, this verse, this chapter, this poem, whatever you want to call it, is speaking to me about usefulness. What is useful? How do we establish value in ourselves and what we do? Is doing useful? So, to be useful in reality and to have value in this context is putting a target upon your head and making you valuable to some hunter of the world, you know. There's a chapter in the Tao Te Ching where Lao Tzu says that if you have a lot of gold and jewels in your house, you're begging to be robbed, you know. But if you don't have anything in your house, nobody wants it, you know. Like, if I don't have anything in my car, I can leave it unlocked. You know, it's kind of one of the philosophies I used to live by. Now I got shit in my car, but, you know. So maybe we want to have less value sometimes, or at least less of what the world deems valuable, and focus more on our internal light and our internal possibility. All right, one more. Hat salesman and a capable ruler. A man of Sung did business in silk ceremonial hats. He traveled with a load of hats to the wild men of the south. The wild men had shaved heads, tattooed bodies. What did they want with silk? Ceremonial hats? Yao had wisely governed all of China. He had brought the entire world to a state of rest. After that, he went to visit the four perfect ones in the distant mountains of Kushi. When he came back across the border into his own city, his lost gaze saw no throne. So, you have the wild men of the south. What would they need of hats? So this man, he made his little section of the world peaceful. Why would they need a ruler? All right. Thank you so much for coming tonight. I know I let you down last weekend, so if you're a long-term listener of mine and you are returning here to check on me, I'm so glad that you're here and at the end of this. And I hope you're taking care, and I hope that your family as well. And I want you to know that I love you, and I hope that you are a being full of light. Even if you're a stranger, you're a being full of light. All of these things apply to anybody who's listening right now. But you, the very vague royal you, all of you are beautiful, amazing creatures, and I'm so grateful that you're breathing And I'm so grateful that you woke up today. And I'm so grateful that you are creating and having an impact in your worlds. Thank you for doing it. You're doing it amazingly. And yeah, let's go see how O's doing.
Hello, people. This is me and the gingerbread man. Today, we're going to have a great day.
A great day?
Huh?
How do we have a great day?
How we have a great day?
Mm-hmm. What's your recipe for a great day?
Taking deep breaths.
Mm-hmm.
If you get really bad or something, take a break. Oh, people who's watching this, you should hear it to your kids.
Some of it's okay. Well, here's my question for you this week, bud. We are in a new house. You have a new room. How do you feel about having a new home?
Good.
What's your favorite part about it?
My favorite part of it is I have my bed backs built together.
Mm-hmm.
We got couches. Oh, sorry, people. That crunching is me eating some chips. Yeah.
Buddy, I think you are amazing. You know that?
Yeah.
You know how cool I think you are?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for being here with me today.
So I have one more question for you guys. My question for you guys, do you ever seen a song that's called Dance Monkey?
Dance Monkey? Oh, my. I don't know the lyrics very well.
Sorry.
All right.
Hey, gingerbread man, should we put on the music right now?
Nope, that would be illegal. Daddy could get sued. But it's a good idea. I appreciate it.
Oh.
All right. Well, why don't you tell everybody bye.
Bye.
I hope you have a great
bye
weekend.
Bye from the gingerbread man and bye for Ask O.
Have a great
hope
week.
Hope you have a great week and have a great day.
Woo.